stand by. We're about to begin. Welcome, and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, IMS version 10, Systems Enhancements. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, you'll learn how IMS version 10 can help you to reuse your existing investment and enable you on your SOA journey, reaping benefits of a more flexible business, simplified and reliable IT infrastructure, and reduced TCO. This is the first teleconference in a series that describes the unique advantages in IMS V10. The speaker for today's teleconference is Diane Goff, IBM Senior IT Specialist. At this time, I would like to hand it over to our speaker, Diane Goff. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. IMS version 10, which was announced last year in October, focuses on improvements in integration, manageability, and scalability. It has quite a large number of enhancements, new functions, and features that provide improvements for all components of IMS, from database to transaction management to overall system operations. It is planned to be generally available later this year. Today I am going to discuss one category of these enhancements, the IMS version 10 system enhancements. Throughout the rest of this year, there will be additional teleconferences like this one, covering additional enhancements in database, transaction management, and connectivity, plus a migration session. Let's move to the agenda chart. For today, I will discuss two groupings of system enhancements, those that focus on system services in general, and then those that focus on systems management. Let's move to the chart titled Systems Enhancements. Here I've grouped the system enhancements into six major categories. There are 12 different enhancements, and these groupings are usability, new functionality, utility improvements, serviceability improvements, security enhancements, and multi-platform support. In usability, we have three enhancements having to do with the FastPass control macro, some messages about system parameters, and virtual storage constraint relief. For new functionality, we're going to talk about Sysplex serial program management, some new log record statistics we have, and support for large sequential data sets. For utility improvements, two utilities that have been around for a long time, the log statistics analysis and the statistical analysis utility, have some enhancements, plus there's improvements in syntax checker. For serviceability, we now have a BPE external trace, plus a new facility called ABAN Search and Notification. We have several security enhancements I'll discuss, and then finally we'll talk about how IMS fits into some multi-platform support for Enterprise Workload Manager. Let's move on then to the first of the usability enhancements, the FP control system definition macro elimination. In IMS version 10, this macro is no longer required. It's ignored if it's actually there, where in previous releases, this macro was required to enable the FastPath capability, plus set some defaults for various FastPath parameters. In IMS version 10, all of these various parameters now become execution parameters on the IMS and DBC procedures. The most important one being the first one listed here, FP equals yes or no, or FastPath equals yes or no, and this is used to enable FastPath. The default is no, so if you truly have FastPath in your system, meaning using DEDBs or using EMH terminal support, you do need to add this execution parameter to your procedures as a migration item. Otherwise, FastPath will not be enabled because no is the default. The other list of parameters, including the buffer parameters, DBBF, DBFX, and buffer size, plus the parameter for output threads, also have execution parameters, but these have been available for a little while. The new one really is the FastPath equals yes or no parameter, the new execution parameter that is required if you use FastPath in your system. And the benefit here is just to simplify the implementation of FastPath. Plus, this is another step toward the elimination of systems definition, which is one of the goals of the IMS product over the number of years in the future. Moving on to the next enhancement, enhanced display of systems parameters. You may be familiar with the DFS1929I message, which lists the various systems parameters that are active for a particular execution of IMS. In version 10, we will actually issue this message twice. First, at initialization, and this is the same as in previous releases, where at the beginning of initialization, we display for each parameter the user-specified value or its default. What's new in IMS version 10 is after restart is complete, we will issue this message again a second time, and here we'll call what we might term, we'll display the actual system parameters that are in effect, meaning that after reading the log in a warm start, for example, some of these parameters may have changed based on settings on the log. So the second message really gives us the actual accurate information, versus the first message is really just the parameters as you had filled them out when you started IMS. There is some additional enhanced information in this message also in version 10. We now include a version number and the control region type, such as DBDC, DB control, etc. So we're providing more accurate information with this enhancement in IMS version 10. Moving on to virtual storage constraint relief savings. If you happen to be a user of ODBA or CCTL, particularly CICS, we now have an option to move the DIRCA control blocks above the line from private storage below the line to extended private storage above the line with an A-Mode 31 option. Note that this must be specified on your DFS PRP macro that you use to set up your draw startup table. But once you set up this option, select this option, those control blocks will be moved above the line. The DIRCA itself contains copies of the PCBs, and each ODBA or CCTL address can have multiple threads. Therefore, each thread has its own DIRCA storage, so we can have several sets of these DIRCA control blocks. The savings are dependent on your installation, meaning if you know your DIRCA size and the number of threads, you could do some estimates for what these virtual storage savings will be. The goal here, again, is to allow the ODBA and CCTL users to have larger PSBs and greater number of concurrent threads because this type of control block information will be above the line. And in some cases, if enough information moves above the line, we may actually be able to move the COS line between CSA and private for your LPAR. Moving on now to some of the new functionality enhancements, let's first talk about Sysplex Serial Program Management, or SSPM. This is an optional enhancement where what we do for serial programs and those that are defined on their application macro with schedule type equals serial, in IMS version 10 now, we will guarantee that there will be only one copy of that particular program scheduled across the entire IMS Plex at any point in time. Versus in previous releases, this program serialization was only enforced within a particular IMS system, such that if you were running in an IMS Plex, you had to have some special procedures, starting MPRs only in certain places, for example, to be able to get this serialization across the IMS Plex. In IMS version 10 now, we will be able to enforce this program level serialization across an IMS Plex. If you are in a shared queues environment and have a common service layer set up with a resource manager address space and a resource manager structure. So what we get from this is a single copy of an IMS TM program, and notice that this is only for the IMS transaction manager environment, will be scheduled across the entire IMS Plex at any point in time. It removes this requirement for specialized customer procedures, and we don't need any program changes or definition changes. Rather, once you're in the required environment, shared queues with CSL and resource manager and a resource structure, this Sysplex serial program management will be automatic. Moving on to enhanced log record statistics, in IMS version 10, we now have a new log record type, the 56 FOX-ABLE log record, which gives us transaction-level statistics. Previous to this, we've had schedule-level statistics available in the HEXO 7 record, but we never had statistics at the transaction level. They were always at the schedule level, which could include multiple transactions. But now with IMS version 10, we will have these transaction level statistics in the 56 Fox Able record. The way we specify this, either on or off for the entire system, is in a PROC-LI member. It happens to be in a new PROC-LI member for IMS version 10, the DFS-DF-XXX PROC-LI member. And then we can use commands to specifically set on or off these transaction level statistics by transaction or PSB. And these commands are persistent across restarts, so the settings will be remembered. So there are two capabilities here, one to set this value at a total system level and then on a transaction-by-transaction basis via command. I have a list here now of some of the additional fields that we will see in these 56 Fox Able log records in addition to what was in the HEXO 7 record. We'll get some more VSAM and OSAM statistics, DB2 call statistics, CPU time, etc. down the list. On the next chart, we will also have some additional information in other existing log records. For example, in the HEXO 8 record, the application start accounting log record, or the start scheduling record, we'll have some information on waits for pool space, waits for intent conflicts, and scheduling elapsed time. In that application termination accounting log record, the HEXO 7 record I mentioned earlier, we'll have some additional IO counts, IO times, lock wait times, DB2 call counts, and other type statistics. And finally, for CIPIC-driven transactions in their termination log record, the OABLE07, they'll have similar statistics as above that are added to the HEXO 7 record. So what we're looking at here is having additional information for performance, now by transaction as well as by commit scope or schedule, additional accounting information, again now by transaction or by schedule. This will hopefully give you additional monitoring information for accounting and performance to help the overall operations of your systems. Moving on to the next functional enhancement, large sequential data sets. What we're seeing here is support for a ZOS-17 DFS-OMS enhancement, where they allow a data set to be larger than 65,535 tracks on a single volume. And this goes along with the larger and larger DASI control units that are coming out. For IMS, what large sequential data set support means is this will apply to BSAM or GSAM data sets and OSAM data sets. And I have a list here of the more specific database data set types. OSAM database data sets, those large databases that we need to have perhaps on a single volume rather than multi-volume, could now use this support. IMS logs can use this support, and this fits in well because logs need to be a single volume data set, so we could now have larger IMS logs. Trace data sets could use this facility, message queue data sets also, and then GSAM or BSAM files. I'd like to mention that to migrate to these large sequential data sets, this can only be done when the data set is created. So this means for GSAM, when you would allocate a new data set. For OSAM, you'd have to do a database reorg, an unload reload. And for the olds, for the logs or the message queue data sets, you would need a cold start that would reformat those. But we would get the benefits of being able to avoid multiple volume data sets and some of the management that goes along with those. And again, as I mentioned, this might be a good case for being able to create larger olds. Let's move to the next chart and start talking about some of the utility enhancements. We have two utilities that have been in IMS for a long time, the Log Transaction Analysis Utility, DFS-ILT-A0, and the Statistical Analysis Utility, DFS-IST-S0. In IMS version 10, these have been totally rewritten. To add some new support, we have support for shared queues and support for non-recoverable transactions, plus just some improvements in execution and performance. For example, the log merge utility is not required for MSC input when you're doing the log transaction analysis utility now. And for the statistical analysis utility, it runs in a single step versus previously it had six steps. So we're looking at simplifying the running of these utilities, simplified execution, improved performance, and some additional capabilities in these utilities. Moving on to the second utility enhancement for the syntax checker. In IMS version 10, the syntax checker, of course, supports the three Procli members as in previous releases, the DFS-PB, XXX, the DFS-DC, XXX, and the DFS-SQ, XXX numbers. In IMS version 10, we're adding support for 10 additional members. Version 10 has 10 additional members. The first one here is the DFS-DF, XXX member. This is the new one for IMS version 10 that has definitions for dynamic resources for DRD and other parameters. Then DFS-CG, XXX for CSL, followed by here in the list the three CSL initialization parameter numbers. CSLOI for operations manager, CSLRI for resource manager, and CSLSI for the SCI address spaces. Then some CQS numbers, CQSIP for initialization parameters, CQSSLXXX and CQSSGXXX for shared queues parameters, and lastly the IMS Connect configuration number and the BPE exit list number. These are now all supported by the version 10 syntax checker. And in fact, to facilitate migration, the syntax checker in version 8 and version 9 supports most of these same numbers. In fact, really the one that's not supported is the totally new one for IMS version 10, that DFS-DF-XXX number. And there's some additional usability enhancements on some of the panels. There's a new panel when you have a non-standard name, and there's also some enhanced keyword display. So we're improving productivity with the syntax checker, whose focus has always been to help you define, verify, and validate parameters and avoid typographical and syntactical kind of errors. Let's move on to the serviceability enhancements now. The BPE external trace is the first one to be discussed. If you're running in a BPE environment, you typically have some of the address spaces listed here. IMS Connect, CQS, and if you're in a CSL environment, OM, RM, and SCI. And these all use BPE services. So if you need to do any kind of tracing for diagnostic purposes for them, you would be using the BPE trace, which up until IMS version 10 has just been an in-storage trace. The enhancement here for version 10 now is that we can take this trace and write it out to external storage as the in-storage trace fills up. So we can have longer traces, get more information, etc. We can use BPE commands, such as display and update, to look at the trace table attributes and settings and make changes there. These commands are used with the ZOS modify command. IPCS will support this new BPE external trace. It will format and print the trace entries for you. And this is done with a new TCB in the BPE address space. Since it's a separate TCB, it's going to be a minimal impact to the overall BPE component itself, which is very critical for the performance of the address spaces that use BPE. So the benefits we get here are the ability to trace activities over longer periods of time. Therefore, we need fewer console dumps because in many cases today, we have to take several console dumps to try to get the specific trace entry, the trace entries that are in an in-storage trace today. So we have more timely access to diagnostic information, and this will hopefully minimize the need to recreate problem scenarios where we ran out of trace space previously to this. Let's move on to the next serviceability enhancement, the IMS Advanced Search and Notification Facility, or what's termed ASN. The goal of this is to help reduce problem resolution time, and we will be able to notify a set of pre-designated contacts about an IMS abnormal termination and then provide additional information for those people about the ABN that happened. This notification mechanism has two versions or two ways of doing it. First, we can send emails to a user-specified list of recipients, and we can also send text messages to cellular devices, for example. And then we provide within the messages, which we'll see an example of in just a second, direct and real-time access to various information about the ABN itself. The message will have automatically created hyperlinks, URLs to IBM Internet resources for analyzing problems, and this is a very secure mechanism. It's handled out of the IMS systems task using this predefined email address list, so it's very safe and secure, and no sensitive information such as customer data is sent in these emails. Let's move to the next chart. We have actually two ways to send out these emails or text messages after a system failure. We can either do it in what's called event-driven mode, meaning this will be automatic and immediate when an IMS control region events. The emails will be sent out then. Or we have a capability to do what's called on-demand email creation through a set of ISPF panels that come with the ASN facility. We use system-driven, knowledge-based kind of information to create the text for these messages and have lots of hyperlinks to such things as ABAN problem description, known problems in the APAR database, perhaps information about PSP buckets, etc. And the next chart shows an example of what the email from ASN would look like in its graphics support. Notice that in the center here, this ABAN for the control region was a system OC4, and it was reported by control region IMS underscore. And then below that, we have six different kind of links we can click on to look at various information. The ABAN description, similar known problems with the symptom, similar problems related to an ABAN OC4, APARs related to the particular module that ABANed, in this case, DFS, KBLAK, PSP information, etc. So hopefully from this email, you can begin to start researching what caused your IMS failure. And the next page just shows the email notification in text format. Notice at the bottom we have, like, for example, the ABAN description with the long URL, known reported problems, etc. So the benefits of ABAN search and notification are to provide timely and automatic notification of system problems to those people who can react to those problems. Typical system programmers today are not always monitoring the IMS consoles or master terminals, etc. So this is a way to notify them when problems have occurred. You can then get quick access to explanations of the errors and causes, access to IMS supply diagnostics to facilitate problem determination and hopefully reduce problem resolution time. Let's move to the next chart and talk about security enhancements. We have several here, the first being support for something called mixed case passwords, meaning we can have passwords containing both uppercase and lowercase characters, and this is to fit into a distributed environment. RACF and ZOS has had this support for some time, and now IMS will be providing support for mixed case passwords with RACF and IMS version 10. And it's just implemented by an IMS startup parameter. The IMS side of it is fairly simple in terms of what you need to do to set up for it, but in terms of actually implementing mixed case passwords in your ZOS environment, that's a much longer term activity, and that would be certainly coordinated across all the various products and functions in your ZOS environment before that would happen. The second area of enhancements has to do with auditing improvements, and now when we log auditing requests, it's always done with a single call to RACF, versus previously there might have been multiple calls to get that kind of information. So that's sort of a performance enhancement. We have a new parameter in the DFS DCXXX proc line number to specify how we audit application-issued auth calls that have failures. We can ask for SMS logging. We can ask to get the RACF ICH408I messages, or both, or just the SMS logging. So there are various options there as to what kind of auditing we want. And additionally, if we have the security reverification exit, we can now do this type of auditing in IMS version 10, where in previous releases, if you use this exit, this type of auditing was disabled. I did want to mention toward the bottom here another security-related issue in IMS version 10, and that is that the security maintenance utility, the SMU utility, is no longer supported in IMS version 10. So you must migrate to RACF or an equivalent product from SMU before you migrate to IMS version 10. And we do have a little bit of new news here in this area. It is back in February of this year. Some new SMU to RACF syntax conversion utilities became available via APAR, and I have the APAR and PTF number listed here to help you do that conversion. And information about these utilities right now is in the PSP bucket until we get some updates into the manuals. So here with security enhancements in IAM version 10, we're standardizing the use of IMS security to be consistent across other subsystems. And moving on to the last system enhancement, Enterprise Workload Manager, which is a multi-platform kind of support. You're probably familiar in COS with Workload Manager, or WLM. We've had that for years, and this allows us to set up WLM policy, where we describe our workload characteristics in terms of priorities and response time goals, and then WLM manages the system resources such as CPU, IO, and storage according to those goals. What IBM has done is extend this workload management concept to other platforms in what's called the Enterprise Workload Management Mode, or EWLM, and this is part of IBM's Virtualization Engine product, or called VE. IMS version 10 now will be able to work within this EWLM environment and provide information to EWLM for some EWLM-enabled IMS transactions. These certain types of transactions will include an EWLM correlator or some information in the OTMA header. Notice they must then come in through OTMA, and they must either really come in through IMS Connect or OTMA. In IMS version 10, there are two exploiters of these EWLM-enabled IMS transactions, the first being the IMS TM Resource Adapter, formerly called the IMS Connector for Java, which comes in through IMS Connect and OTMA. Or if we're using the MQ Bridge through OTMA, we will also get this EWLM information. So the benefits we have here now is our IMS workload as part of the ZOS system can be included in EWLM's view of the overall workload in a multi-platform environment. We will have that IMS data now included in the various response time reports, etc., that come from EWLM. Let's now move on to system management enhancements in IMS version 10, and I'll be talking about 8 new enhancements here for systems management, covering things for MSC, online change, some command enhancements, type 2 command enhancements, a new function called global status. We'll talk a little bit about changes in operations manager, a new Rex XML parcer. The SBOC can now be run as a batch utility, and lastly, some enhancements to the secondary master terminal. First, let's look at command support for MSC definitions. What we have here is the capability to update and query existing MSC resources, meaning these resource definitions must be in your sysgen, they must be there. But once they are there, we can modify those resources without requiring a systems definition or an IMS restart. MSP link names and MS link names may be changed. MS links may be associated with different MSP links, and the sysIDs for MS names can be changed. The usage here really is the case where we would set up some what you might call dummy resources during systems definition, just so we have some sets of MSC resources there, but we really are not able to activate them yet. And then once we need to use them, we can use the type 2 update command to be able to make changes to them and then, in effect, activate those resources. So we have, in effect, dynamically created these MSC resources without doing an IMS restart. And this is actually considered the first step into full BRV capability for MSC. We move to the next chart. This is an example of how you might do this. We have two systems, IMSA and IMSB, with a certain set of definitions. We have one MSP link, two MS links, and two MS names definitions set up with some dummy parameters. And then when we want to activate those, we would issue a set of commands on IMSA and a set of commands on IMSB. Notice here for IMSA, first we would update the MSP link name from dummy 1 to IMSAB, and then add the remote VTAM node, make it IMSB. We would then update the two MS link definitions to make them point to this MSP link we just set up, and then finally update the two MS name definitions to update the remote and local sysIDs, and then do similar commands on IMSB. So we would then have a working set of MSC definitions instead of this dummy set that we had put in through our systems definition. let's move to some online change enhancements. First is the ACB Live member online change. And this is where we can now add or change individual members of ACB Live dynamically while the system is up and running. The way this is done is by moving the ACB Live members that we want to add or change into a staging data set, and from there they go into the active ACB Live. This does not require the typical active-inactive switch of ACB Lives that the regular online change or the full online change process requires. We only look at the staging library for these change members, but one of the nice facilities here is that only those resources that are being added or changed are quiesced in this member online change rather than all the resources that are typically done in the full online change environment today. And this can coexist with the full library switch capability, meaning we can still do an active and inactive switch of ACB Lives. I did want to mention that this new facility is based on global online change, so it means we need to be using the OLC stat data set instead of the ModSat data set, and we do need the common service layer setup that we would need for global online change. But it definitely is a more efficient processing to do just a few member changes rather than the full traditional online change process, and it very much complements DRD, or dynamic resource definition, where we could add new programs and databases, and then via ACB Live member online change, we can add the necessary ACB Live members that go along with those new programs and databases. Let's move on to the second online change enhancement, and this is called the Online Change Commit Processing Enhancement, where our goal is to improve the chances of success for an online change commit process. Notice toward the bottom, this enhancement has actually been available in shared queues in previous releases. What we're doing here now in version 10 is making it available for local queues in addition to shared queues as well in version 10. With this enhancement, what we're doing is looking at indirectly affected transactions in a different way. They will no longer cause the online change commit process to fail. Indirectly affected transactions are those transactions that would be sitting on the queue when you're trying to do an online change, but no attributes on their transaction macro are being actually changed by this online change process. Rather, these transactions just reference a program or database that's being changed, such as a program in ModBlox being changed, PSB and ACB Live being changed, or the program in ModBlox referencing a database being changed, or a PSB and ACB Live referencing a database is being changed. But no attributes for the particular transaction itself on its transaction macro are being changed. Now in IMS version 10 with local queues and shared queues, these indirectly affected transactions will no longer cause an online change commit to fail. Let's move on to enhancements to the type 2 commands in IMS version 10, remembering that type 2 commands do need a common service layer environment set up with operations manager to be able to use these. First is the query resource for work. We can now, with this command, notice the format, query the particular resource type, whether it's a DB, database, program, PGM, transaction, TRAN, or routing code, RTC, followed by its names, and we can look at multiple names here, and show the work, meaning showing the work in progress that might cause an online change or some DRD commands to not complete successfully. And there's a list here on the bottom, online change ModBlox, online change ACBs, or the create, delete, and update commands. These are the ones that are used for DRD. So we would show some type of work in progress that might cause these various processes to fail. We can also query a resource for related resources. And the first example here is to query a database for the PSBs that reference it. So in this example, we're querying a DB, give it its name, and we want to show the program that references that database. So we will get the names of the programs that reference that database in their PSBs. The second example, we can query a transaction for the program it invokes, say query TRAN name, give a name, and say show program, and this returns the name of the program that transaction invokes. There's a few more on the next chart for query resource for related resources. We can do a query for routing codes to get the regions where it is active. And there's the example of the command that you would use, query RTC name show region. And secondly, we can query a program for the transactions databases and routing codes that are related to it. We would use query program, give a name, and then show whether it would be the transaction, the routing code, or the database that was related to that program. TRAN would return the names of transactions which invoke that program. Routing code returns the names of the routing codes associated with the program. And DB returns the databases referenced by this PSB. Let's move on to a new command, which is the queue command for messages. It's a new command where we can now queue a message to a transaction, can be local or shared, or to an L-term. And you provide the message data and the command. The messages must be single segment. And here's an example. We would say queue to a TRAN or L-term, give the name of that transaction or L-term, then say option in queue, and follow it by the data for the message that you want to queue to that particular L-term or TRAN. We also are able to dequeue messages with this queue command, either from local or shared transaction queues or L-term queues. Notice the example where we would do a queue to a TRAN or L-term, give the name of that TRAN or L-term. And here now for our option, we would do dequeue1, meaning dequeue1 message, or dequeue all the messages that are queued to that particular transaction or L-term. So we have some nice enhanced command capability for managing queues here with this new command, and it actually gives us on the dequeue side some new facilities for the non-shared queues environment for dequeuing messages, which we previously have been able to do in the shared queues environment, but not in the local or non-shared queues environment. Let's move on to the next chart, where we talk about how the responses are now formatted for Type 2 commands in IMS version 10. And we have some additional enhancements here if we have a Type 2 command that gets a non-zero completion code. The output will look a little different. It will have what's called a CC text column or completion code text column to give you some more information about the reason for the non-zero completion code. And notice I have two examples here. First, we're going to update a database. The database happens to be account master, and we want to stop its access. And in our particular IMS Plex, we have two IMSs, two members, IMS1 and IMS2, that are accessing this database account master. Notice in IMS2, we did get a completion code of 0, so everything was fine. But in IMS1, we got a completion code of AA. There was a problem. There was an issue. And now in IMS version 10, we will have this completion code text that says that the reason was the database was in use by a BMP. Versus previous to this, we would have just gotten the completion code and then had to know what it was, look it up, etc. So this is providing us much more information in error conditions with Type 2 commands. And the example on the bottom of the chart, query DB, we're going to look at two databases, account history and customer history, and we want to show their access type, some of the characteristics of those databases. Here we just have a single member, IMS1, that we're looking at in our IMS Plex, and we have the two databases, account history and customer history. Notice for IMS1, account history is fine, and so we get its access type of update. But for customer history in IMS1, we get a completion code of 10, which means there were no resources found or that database was not defined. So again, we get some additional information about the completion code. Let's move on to the chart about resource timestamps. We have a nice new facility with the query command in version 10 where we can say show timestamps when we do a query. And what we can get is four different types of timestamps. We can get a time create, a time update, a time access, and a time import related to the particular resource that we're doing the query on. Time create, meaning when that resource, or in the case of DRD, if it happened to be a descriptor, was created. And here's some cases listed below it for that creation time. For the update time, this would be the time the resource was last updated via an update command, for example, for a definitional attribute, not a status. The time access is kind of interesting. This is the last time that resource was accessed or used. And I have a list here based on the type of resource, database, program, transaction, or routing code, and then also descriptor, which is a model type capability we have in DRD, to indicate what this access time means. For DB, for a database, it would be the last access by an application program or a DL1 call. For a program, it would be when that program was last scheduled, etc. And so what these resource timestamps do give us is a lot of additional information about our resources, how they're used, when they're used, etc., which is a really nice facility in version 10. And that's the last of our command enhancements. Let's move on to a new facility in IMS, version 10, called Global Status, which in an IMS Plex allows us to have global status maintained for databases, HLDB partitions, DEDB areas, and transactions, very similar to SysPlex terminal management we have for VTAM terminal status. The status is maintained in a resource manager structure, meaning we do need to have a common service layer set up with resource manager and the structure available. These global statuses are created in two ways. First, by using the type 1 command with the global parameters, again for databases, areas, or partitions, such as stop, start, DBD, DBR, or a type 2 command with scope all, and scope all happens to be the default for the update command, again for databases, areas, partitions, or transactions in this case. These global status commands are processed on all IMS systems, and they change the local status, and then that status is set in the resource manager structure for the various database area partition or transaction we're working with. The next slide talks a bit more about global status. Resources, therefore, these ones we're talking about, databases, partitions, areas, and transactions, have two statuses. They have both a local status and a global status. And while normally they might be the same, in some cases they may not be. And here's some examples where, for example, a transaction may be stopped globally but started locally on a particular IMS. We do want that transaction to run. Or a database may be started globally, but DBR'd or unavailable in a particular IMS. So the local status and global status do not necessarily need to be the same, although I think normally they would be. The way global status is used, though, it will be used to set local status only in one case, and that is when, if an IMS system is down, and this global status is set differently while that IMS system is down, when that IMS system is restarted, that particular IMS system would assume this global status rather than keeping the local status that it had previously before it was taken down. So the benefits here are we're looking at our databases, our areas, and our transactions as resources that can be treated globally with commands. And these are some of the access attributes that we can look at for databases, areas, they're listed here, or transactions. Each IMS system will maintain its own local status, as well as the global status will be maintained in the resource structure. And remember that restarted IMS systems will assume the status that was changed while they were down. So in effect, their local status will be set by the global status. Moving on to operation manager enhancements, we have two here, the first being an audit trail will now be available for all the IMS commands that go through OM. This is something that we haven't had in Operations Manager since its inception, so this is a nice new function for users of Operations Manager. This audit trail contains input commands and responses to those commands that come from OM clients, such as TSO SPOC, the IMS Control Center, etc. These actual log records are contained in a COS system logger log stream. So you would be working with your COS system programmers to set up a system logger that would be used by the Operations Manager audit trail. If we want to format this audit log, we can use the IMS DFS ERA 10 program. There's two exit routines available, one which gives you more of an interpreted or formatted listing, and one which gives you a dump listing. And perhaps the better way to look at this audit trail might be through the TSO SPOC or a Rex written SPOC, which both have support for reading this audit trail. The second enhancement has to do with unsolicited messages. In previous releases, OM clients did not see unsolicited messages. They only saw input and output from those input commands. Now in IMS version 10, if an AOP client subscribes for unsolicited messages, those unsolicited messages will also go to that AOP client while it is up and running. So here we have the audit trail with Operations Manager that can be used for enhancing problem determination for such historical and auditing purposes. And then with the unsolicited message support, we get the complete information for our automation OM clients. Let's move on to the Rex XML parser. This is a new capability provided in IMS version 10 to assist us in interpreting command responses that come from Operations Manager, because remember, they're always encapsulated in XML. And interpreting that XML can be a complex task for a program, and there is no commercial Rex XML parser available at this time. When you do parse XML output, it goes into a stem variable and a suffix. Without this parser, the suffix is just the number of the row, and then the application has to figure a lot out to be able to parse that XML. But with this new parser function on IMS version 10, the suffix becomes the XML tag, so it's a lot easier for the application program to interpret these command responses for the Rex programmer to do that. Moving on to the next chart, the Spock utility. Here we have the capability to submit IMS commands from a batch job, but using the Operations Manager interface. These IMS commands can be either Type 2 commands or Type 1 commands. Either type of command can go in through this batch Spock utility. We do set up the IMS environment via execution parameters, where we specify the IMS Plex name, the command routing, the wait time. These would be parameters that we set up in our normal TSO Spock environment. We then put our commands in a sysin file, and we can have multiple commands in that file. One would be executed, the next one would be executed, etc., in sequence. And the output will go to sysprint, where the responses are formatted to look like the Spock screen format. So this is a nice kind of capability to be able to include steps within certain jobs where we can execute online commands, those commands being either type 1 or type 2 commands, as I mentioned earlier. And here's an example where when we want to reorganize a database, we might start out with a step using this batch Spock utility that issues the DBR command, then actually run the reorg, and then finally end that job with a batch Spock utility step that issues the start database command. And this is the last now, the secondary master terminal enhancements on the next chart. We have two enhancements here. One is on the smcopy command. We now have a new message keyword to control system messages that go to the secondary master. And this enhancement actually allows us to turn those messages off, where previously to this, system messages were always sent to the secondary master. The second enhancement is in the Type 2 AOI exit, DFS AOE00. And this exit can now control logging of messages to the secondary master, as well as to the primary master or the regular master on a message-by-message basis, where previous to this, this exit only controlled messages that went to the primary master. So we have some new capabilities here in IMS version 10 that help us with handling all of the messages that go to the secondary master. So I'm on my last chart now, IMS version 10, the summary chart, where here I'm listing all of the various functions and features that I've talked about over the last hour. In the area of systems enhancements, we have 12 different enhancements, and in the area of systems management enhancements, we discussed 8 different areas of enhancements. These all focus, again, on integration, manageability, and scalability. Hopefully some of these will interest you and help you when you get to migrating to IMS version 10 on your systems at home. I think you'll notice that IMS version 10 does have a lot of smaller enhancements. We have a couple major ones, but there's several smaller ones, just like I've talked about today, more so than in previous versions. I would like to thank you for joining this teleconference today, and I'll turn the call back to the operator.
Thank you, Diane. Now we would like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a live question and answer session with the presenter. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all the options before making your selection. For our first question, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. If it was low, press star 3. And we'll pause for just a moment to gather your responses. Question 2. How was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference? If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. If it was more technical than you needed to hear, press star 3. Again, we'll pause for just a moment. Question 3. What version of IMS are you currently running? If it is version 9, press star 1. If it is version 8, press star 2. And if it is version 7, press star 3. For our next question, would you like to exploit the benefits of SLA integration of IMS? If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. And for our final question, we hope you have enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you are interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. That does conclude our survey. Thank you all for your participation. Now let's move on to your questions. To ask your question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone at any time. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that is star 1 if you have a question. At this time, I will turn the call over to Diane while we wait for questions.
If any of you have additional questions after today about the IMS version 10 system enhancements, please feel free to send me an email, and I'll be happy to answer your question. My email address is dgoff, D-G-O-F-F, at us.ibm.com. And I hope that many of the features I've talked about today in the systems area of IMS will allow you to implement IMS version 10 and get enhancements and features that way. Thank you.
A reminder, that is star 1 if you do have a question today. And Ms. Goff, there are no questions at this time. I will turn the conference back to you for any additional comments.
Okay, I just wanted to mention that, as mentioned earlier, there will be several more teleconferences later this year on additional IMS version 10 enhancements. In August, there'll be one on DRD and online change. In September, there'll be one on database and DBRC enhancements. In October, we'll talk about migrating to IMS version 10. And then in November, there'll be a teleconference on IMS Transaction Manager and connectivity enhancements to give you a good idea of the overall IMS version 10 products. Again, thank you for joining the conference today. And I'll turn it back to the operator.
Thank you. That does conclude today's conference. We appreciate your... Have a great day.